Hello, all you cool cats and kittens in my ELDR 6603 class. It's Dr. Burkett back with another weekly podcast lecture. I hope you've had a great week. I hope you're enjoying whatever's left of winter, whatever you want to call it, if it's really winter. Some days are colder than others. It's just a little weird. Like, it rained this week. Don't think it was supposed to rain, at least where I live. And I live in North Fort Worth. So it's a little strange weather we're having, but I guess it's better than ice and snow, which is usually what we have around this time in North Texas anyway. And maybe you like ice and snow, but I haven't decided yet if I'm at the age where I prefer to be cold or I prefer to be hot. I don't know which. The extremes are killing me, whether it's 3 below 0 or 105 degrees. I think I've decided I don't like either one. So with that being said, I hope you're doing great. It is February 6th, 2024, and I am broadcasting today from my home office because my dog kept me up all night last night. So I decided to stay in, and I'll just broadcast from the home office today. But it's okay. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get into it today. First of all, I want to talk about the podcast survey. If you saw, I sent out a podcast survey through Canvas yesterday. I just want your feedback on these things that I'm calling a podcast, because what I really want to know is, and the way I kind of approach, at least as you noticed, the way I approach lectures and I approach, contact with you, I don't think is a traditional style. I call it podcast style. It's almost like you're watching a YouTube video or listening to a podcast or a radio program. That was my intent. That's my approach. I don't want to be boring. I want to be engaging. And so the same reasons why you tune in to a YouTube video or a podcast lecture or a podcast is I want to be that engaging host, basically. I don't want to be a professor. I want to be a host. And so today's topic is going to be equity. Inequality. And so I'm going to try to make that as least boring as I can. But on top of that, I'm also talking about a few things related to the class. So that's why I sent out the survey. I'm researching if podcasting is a method that we can use to deliver professional development. Working with Denton ISD on that project. I think what I've learned so far in that is outside of the topics, which you may or may not be interested in. And again, that's another advantage of podcasting. Like, you feel like you know enough about this topic and you don't want my opinion or experience on it. Great. Don't listen to it. You don't have to. But if there is something that you find interesting or engaging, you can listen to it. So that's sort of an advantage of having that level of access. But spend some time, if you don't mind. 10, 15 minutes, I think. Just give me your feedback. And if you can send me proof of purchase, you know, that you completed it, I'll give you 15 points on your lowest grade just for, you know, giving me your time. So with that, I appreciate that. Next week, I'm going to be sending out another survey, and I do this for every class. It's my midterm survey. For 7-week courses, it's kind of hard to gauge, like, where are you? You know, how are you feeling? How's it going? How are you doing? How am I doing? So I call it like a hot button check-in. Just, how's it going? Just to kind of get a pulse for how you're feeling, how I'm feeling, how the class is going. And so I'll send that out next week. I call it the midterm survey. We're about 4 weeks in at that point. So, you know, we're kind of rolling downhill after that. So just give me your feedback. It's anonymous, of course. And you can kind of give me an idea of what's going on, and I'll adjust. That's what I try to do. I try to adjust. The end of the semester survey will come out after the class is done, somewhere around mid-March. And then I don't get that feedback until, late April, well after grades are turned in. That one is completely anonymous, too, and it's a chance for you to give me more feedback on the class. And that's the one that counts towards my evaluations and my tenure. It's the one the bosses look at. That's the one they care about. So I'll cover that when the time comes. But this one's just for me. How are we doing? So that'll be next week. All right, next, research projects. So now most of you are kind of well into this. You've been meeting with your groups. You've been talking. You've got some research questions. You've got some topics. I've met with a few of you. I've got a few more meetings this week for those of you who want some additional guidance. So let's take a moment to think about where are we with this project and where we're going. Okay, so ultimately, just for your practice as doctoral students, that's essentially what this is. It's practice. What does a presentation look like? What does a research project look like? Some of you have already engaged in this work already in some previous courses. Some of you are a little new to this. So that's why I wanted some intermingling so that you get an idea of how this process works. So that's one part, just experience for you. Number two, we do want students to participate in the symposium and other presentation formats, whether it's a large conference or a small conference like we have at TWU and so on. And there's a virtual option if you're not going to come to campus. So never mind that for now, but want you to get that practice as well. What is it like to submit a proposal for a conference on something that you've worked on, some research projects, a case study, anchor research, real data collection, whatever it is that you're doing, so that you get that practice, that rehearsal aspect of submitting for a conference. So ultimately, so those of you who are asking, like, what's your ultimate goal? Well, at the end, you're really just, for my purposes, final project purposes, you're submitting a proposal. That's really all you're going to do. And as part of that proposal, you're going to put together a mini presentation. So that's what will fulfill the requirements of this course. But that I've been saying the last couple of weeks is that, don't waste your time on something small. Be thinking about what could be out of this project. And that's why I've been encouraging you to be thinking about, what can I do with this that could be impactful, say, either for a presentation, a potential journal article, a paper, something of that nature, because I want you thinking about, as doctoral students, the ultimate goal is getting a publication, getting into a conference, getting into a journal, and even progressing towards your dissertation. That's why I've been impressing upon you, I'm sure your other professors have been impressing upon you, that the work that you're doing now should lead to something, okay? So that's why I'm trying to engage you in that thought process. Where is this research going to take you? Where do you want it to take you? Or are you just practicing, okay? So be thinking about what you want out of this. And then if the answer is, I want to publish, great. Dr. Burkett's here to help you with that. I'd like to be second author on your publication, but I can walk you through that process. You want to go to a conference, Dr. Burkett can help you with that. We have several conferences that we've kind of been sending out for you to be thinking about. CSOAT comes up in October. That's a state conference. I just sent out the, you will see a publication call for proposals on that at the end of today. I always post the announcements after 4 o'clock, so you'll see that. But then I've also mentioned the American Society for Higher Education Conference. It's a larger conference. It's in Minneapolis and it's in November, but it's something you could be thinking about. The call for proposals for that conference just came out last week. So if I'm going to post that as well. If that's something you're interested in, TWU can help support you in that. They will support your registration and they will support one other thing, but you have to pay for your travel, you have to pay for your hotel. But we can talk about all that if the time comes. But again, I want you thinking, forward thinking, where do I want to go with this? Do I want to present at a conference? Do I want to write into a journal? What's next for me? And then, there's 6 of you, and I don't have the names in front of me because I'm at home, but there are 6 individuals in this class that will also be in my seminar class in 7 week 2. So I've mentioned those of you, and you should know who you are by now. The work you're doing now, you're going to roll right into that class. And the ultimate goal of that class will be to publish or at least submit for a publication. So that's the practice we want, okay? This how the doctoral process works. Ultimately, when you have DR in front of your name, the expectation is that you are an expert in something. And as an expert in that something, you are publishing, you are presenting, you are talking about your research, and so on. And we want you to have that practice. So that's what the research symposium is. And I want a really good representation of our students there. So that's why we're working on this. So strength in numbers, That's why I asked you to form groups so that you can get the practice of, especially the lit review stuff. I mean, that's the bulk of it. Sometimes pulling together that literature review can be a daunting task. So there is strength in numbers. Some of you have opted to work alone or work in pairs. That's fine, whatever works for you. But at the same time, you know, I want you having that experience. That's why we're doing what we're doing. So do not forget, ever, I'm here to help you. I'm here to support you. And I want, you know, your not only your feedback, but I want to be able to answer your questions, you know, and as you're thinking about what those next steps are, let's talk about it. Where do you want to go? Because even then, maybe many of you don't know where to go next. You know, maybe you don't know where to publish. So there's hundreds of journals out there. And there's, as we say, there's every paper has a home. So, you know, sometimes you get rejected by journals. They don't want your paper, or it's not rigorous enough, or the research isn't kind of doesn't fit what they're looking for. That happens a lot. I've been rejected a lot. But there's a paper. Your paper has a home. So let's find a home for your paper once you get to that point. So let me help you. Be thinking about where you want to go. And then, you know, when we get to that point, ultimately, you're going to submit your abstracts. That's coming up in a couple of weeks. So we'll want to see what's next for you. So look, I'm excited and I feel a sense of excitement because you're getting to do something that you're passionate about. You're getting to really work on something that you care about. And I think that makes the research more palpable. I don't always like doing research, but if I can do research on topics that I'm passionate about, that I care about, or I'm interested in, it makes it a little bit easier. At least if you're living in a professor world where research is expected of you. So that being said, keep working hard. Always reach out to me as you're progressing. And again, I've met with several students, and I will continue to meet with you until you just don't need me anymore. So that's cool too. So, all right, let's get into it. I want to talk a little bit about equality and equal access. So what does this really mean? Let's think about that in terms of what is equal. What does equal access really mean? What does equality really mean? And I think I have a really good example of this. And I bring it up because in education, we are kind of expected to level the playing field. In fact, education is actually called the great equalizer. Having an education often provides opportunities that most people don't often have. The problem with that is that once you attain that education, a lot of people are like, okay, now what? You know, a lot of high school graduates feel that way. Now what? This often comes up a lot. And I don't know that educators really spend enough time talking about it. So let's think about it in these terms. I got a lot of stories. And I'm going to share a lot of these stories. Got a close friend of mine, military background, very proud military background, okay? Nothing wrong with that. That's great. Proud of his service. His family's proud of his service. But they're pushing that concept onto their son. Family background is military, so you also must serve in the military. However, their son doesn't really want to do that. Their son wants to pursue other things. So in those terms, equal access, you know, pressing the educational attainment beyond a certain level, because in the education world, we often look at the military as a place where students go when they don't have any other options and they don't have any other choice. That conceptually could be thought about in two ways. The military can provide an individual with a lot of opportunity versus military can be a last resort for those who have no access at all. See? So that's one thought, one food for thought. Another food for thought is I have another close friend who her son has some special needs. He has some behavioral concerns. He has some social skills concerns. And for him, the school is really struggling with how to meet the child's needs. He's prone to outbursts, prone to name calling. Because he has an emotional disturbance, he also has oppositional defiance, so he has trouble with authority. And what's interesting is the school really doesn't have a lot of students like this child. So they are kind of throwing up their hands, like, I don't know what to do with this kid, and the parent doesn't know what to do, and like, what are we all going to do? So what does equality and equal access mean for that child when the ultimate goal is to achieve an education, right? Here's another example. So again, these are just little tidbits, food for thought, okay? What does equal access mean? I'm asking a broader question for you to think about. When I was a principal, of a very low-income school. We had about very close to 80% low socioeconomic. And of course, in a school district, you have a variety of schools that have a variety of needs. And there are some schools in my district at the time that did not have low socioeconomic students. In fact, they had some affluent students. They were doing, they didn't have low socioeconomic concerns. However, the school district and its local funding, not Title I, was talking about how it funds locally, elected to give every elementary school the same amount of money. Okay? So to do whatever it is that elementary schools need to do with funding. So that school across town that had affluent students was getting the same amount of money as I was getting, but my school had more needs, had more concerns, had more students with disabilities, had more students with low socioeconomic concerns. While that school across town had a robust PTA, had a fundraising arm, and was getting, frankly, money that it probably didn't need that I could have used to serve its kids. Now, is that equality? Is that equal access? What does that look like? So this term equality, you know, it's a strange term, because when you think about it, ultimately, we want all students to be served. We want everything to be the same for everybody. But the reality is that, and this is where equal access comes in, it's not the same for everybody. And when you have one child over here that has more needs than another child, well, that's not going to be, there's not going to be equality there. We have to do more for this child than we need to do for this child. So that's not equality, but we have to provide equal access. And this child's needs is more than this child's needs. So I bring this up because this comes up in a policy and politics class, because there are a lot of people who don't understand what those terms mean. They don't understand that not everything can be equal. A lot of people don't like that. And I understand, you know, because if this child's getting this, then I want my child to get this. Here's another example. Sesame Street. I love telling the story because it's fascinating. And I think it sums up my point that I'm trying to make when it comes to equality and equal access, is that when Sesame Street premiered in the 1970s, the idea, the concept behind the show was to broadcast to students who live in low-income areas. So the show reflected that, you know, New York City ghetto, for example. And the show reflected that. The idea was to provide a show for students and talk about, you know, grammar, kindergarten level sort of education, you know, basic numbers, shapes, colors, that kind of thing. And the show would be broadcast on a public access channel so that everybody would have access to it. You didn't have to subscribe to, you know, a cable service. You didn't have to do any of that. It would be on PBS, and that's publicly funded, and everybody has access to PBS. So the idea was, you've got students over here that have the ability to supplement their education through X, Y, and Z means, because their parents have that access, and And then you have an opportunity over here with Sesame Street to help bolster a group of kids who don't have that access. So that was the concept behind the show. It was the earliest example of what we call the education gap. And this was to level that education gap. The recognition that there is a gap in education. And we have a method to sort of rise all the ships. Okay. Well, guess what happened? Let me take a drink while you think about it. Here's what happened. They had amazing characters. They had compelling storylines, and it was a fun show to watch. So much fun that it has now been on for three generations, and some of those same characters are still around and still enduring today. What child doesn't love Big Bird or Elmo or Cookie Monster or Oscar the Grouch? These are all wonderful, fun characters. And the problem is it didn't just appeal to low-income students that it was originally targeted for. It appealed to all children. So instead of raising all the ships, all it did was it pushed the average up. That's all the show did. So it's a wonderful example of trying to provide equality, but did not provide that equal access. Because these students were already bolstered, Sesame Street just bolstered them even more. So one last story about this, as I want you to begin thinking about what is equality and what is equal access. And I'll share with you a personal story about my own son. Long, long, long time ago when he was entering kindergarten. He's a junior in high school now. So we're getting ready for school to start. He is entering kindergarten. And mind you, I live in a good neighborhood. I live in a neighborhood with a community school. And everyone's sort of middle class, upper middle class where I live. So we don't have a lot of low-income parents where I say, and that's important for the story, important for the context. And excuse me. I'm like Marco Rubio over here with all the drinking. You look that up. It's funny. So anyway, I am with my wife. We're about a week before school starts. Take our son up to school. He's going to do meet the teacher and all the fun stuff that come with it. You know, the school supplies. And I remember the story well because I think it's the best example of trying to make the point that I'm talking about equality and equal access. So, coming from a family of educators, of course, my son could read before he went into kindergarten. He already knew some very basic. He knew his colors and his shapes, and he could count to about 50 at the time, I think. He could read some very basic words. He was already reading, was the point. He didn't need letters to know, you know, learn his ABCs. He already got a lot of that in his pre-K education. So he had already had a pretty clear understanding of what was going to be, you know, happening next as far as his early learning was concerned. He'd already had a leg up in his education, is my point. So we're going through the motions, of course. Here's your desk. Here's where you're going to sit. The teacher had already written out a little nameplate for him. It happened to be a Sesame Street one. It had Elmo on it. Oh, look, there's Elmo. And this is where you're going to sit. This is where you're going to keep your stuff and your crayons and look at all the fun stuff in the room. And we're going through all that stuff. You know, this is school life. Okay. Well, meanwhile, behind us, there's another family doing the exact same thing. Oh, look at your desk. This is where you're going to sit. This is all the fun stuff. This is your teacher. Going through the same thing we're going through. But then I overhear the mom as her kid sits down at his desk. She points to that same Elmo nameplate that I pointed to. And she says to her kid, look at all the letters you're going to learn this year. And that's when I realized, holy cow, the education gap exists even where I live. And that poor teacher, on the first day of school, now has to differentiate. Because she's got one child over here entering, knows his letters, colors, numbers, shapes, can already read, can already count to 50, 75. This kid knows nothing. Now, it doesn't matter why he knows nothing. It doesn't matter why his parents did or did not or could or could not give them, give him the educational attainment that we gave to our son. It is irrelevant. It means nothing now that we're in a classroom. So how does a teacher provide equal access for both children and an equal education? It's two different things. How do we do that? So how do we advocate for that? How do we strengthen our schools knowing that this child now has different needs than this child? What do we do? So, food for thought, things for you to be thinking about, little tidbits. I gave you a military story, I gave you a special needs story, I gave you a funding story, and now I gave you an education gap story. So I encourage you, go look at our module lesson, what does equality and equal access really look like? Read through those lecture notes, and it'll give you some sense for, you know, how we can work together to solve this problem in education, because frankly, it's not an easy problem to solve. So that is our lecture for today. So I leave you with our wellness activity. I forgot to give you one last week. I hope you practice the breathing activity. One thing that I've been doing for my wellness is I've been trying to learn yoga. Trying. I'm not good at it. I don't stretch well. As you can see, I'm a big guy, so stretching is difficult for me at times, but I'm working. I'm trying. I'm trying some yoga. So for your wellness activity, what I want you to do is this week is I want you to take 15 minutes. That's all I'm asking. Find 15 minutes this week and do something just for you. Not something for someone else, not a boss or a loved one or a child. 15 minutes for you. Read a book, listen to music, go for a walk, watch a show, something. Take a 15-minute break for yourself. Go somewhere, relax, close your eyes, breathe, something. Practice that as a wellness activity. You owe it to yourself to give yourself 15 minutes of something, whatever that looks like. I'm giving you permission to do that because many of you are moms and dads. Many of you are working professionals. Now you're trying to do graduate school. You don't have my class. We have other classes that you're taking. You have phone calls to respond to, emails to respond to, texts to respond to, excuse me, and sometimes we just don't take 15 minutes for ourselves, but you need it. So please take 15 minutes for yourself. Do something that you enjoy. 15 minutes. That's all I'm asking. And work that into your routine. And maybe it becomes 15 minutes a day that you're just going to shut down everything, block out the world, and give yourself that 15 minutes of wellness that you need. Okay. So, all right. With that, I hope you have a great week. Please reach out to me. Happy to help you with anything that you need. And as always, take care of yourself, take care of each other, and I will see you soon. Bye-bye.